Hi, this is VLMD Rounds, a podcast that aims to provide medical science and tools to optimize your health. I am Dr. Vivian Loh, board certified in internal medicine and obesity medicine. Now, before I dive into today's episode, let me get through the housekeeping stuff because I always forget by the end. If you find the podcast episodes helpful to you, please don't forget to like and subscribe. Also, you can go on my website, vivianlohmd.com. That's VYVYANELOHMD.com. And under events, you'll see the schedule of my live stream Q&A sessions, which I am trying to do regularly. So I'd love to see you come live with me and hear your questions and suggestions for future episodes. Also, those of you who have sent me your requests, I am keeping a list. I don't have to check it twice. I intend to make episodes based on your requests, but it may just take me some time. I tend to film or record these episodes after work. I finish at 9:30 at night, and then I try to push on a little bit into the night, sometimes maybe the weekends, which are even harder for me to fit in, but they get done somehow. I will be making those episodes that you have requested. Just a little patience is all I ask. And along those lines, today's episode is actually a request by Thomas Youngen, my first request. So Thomas, this episode is for you, and you wanted me to talk about fats. Let's go. Now, when people talk about fats, it's pretty common for me to hear fats, lipids, fatty acids used interchangeably. They're not really the same thing. If we look at the general category, the big category of lipids, L-I-P-I-D-S, right, that is a group of organic compounds that are not able to dissolve in polar solvents, but are able to do so in nonpolar solutions. So when we say polar, what do we mean? When you look at a bond, if you remember from episode one, I talked about how atoms can share electrons in a bond, in this covalent bond, right? And, the electrons in that bond are distributed, but not always in a symmetric way. In other words, they may be skewed towards one end of the molecule versus the other. So if we take a classic polar substance like water, H2O, so with water, the oxygen end tends to draw the electrons closer to it in the bond. It's more electronegative, while the hydrogen ends are relatively deficient in the influence of those electrons in the bond, right? So the hydrogen ends tend to be more electropositive, okay? So you have this sort of, it's charge. It's not really charge, but the bond charges are not symmetrically distributed because of the skewing of the electrons to one end versus another, right? And then you would call that a polar bond. If you have a substance that has one part of the structure that is polar and another part that is nonpolar, we call that an amphipathic molecule. Okay, and you often see that with lipids. They are amphipathic molecules, many of them. Okay, so they have polar ends and they have nonpolar ends. So, as I said, these lipids are this big general category of organic substances. They're not really soluble in water and other polar substances, but they're pretty good in dissolving in things like alcohol or benzene or toluene, which are nonpolar. When we say fatty acids, we're really talking about a subset of this class of lipids, okay? And they're very important because fatty acids form a lot of lipid structures, And they are part of many lipid structures in your body. So just wanted to clarify that they're not quite the same as lipids, but they're in that subcategory under the big class of lipids. When we say fatty acids, we're talking about molecules with a particular formula. And so, of course, they're organic, so they're made of carbon chains. At one end, we have what we call the carboxylic end. And that means that they have this functional group that is COOH. So you have the carbon, it's double bonded to one oxygen, and then it has another bond to OH, a hydroxy group. Okay. And that whole end, the COOH end, is called the carboxylic end. The opposite end is the methyl end. So at the other end of the molecule, you have carbon bonded by single bonds to three hydrogens. So that's CH3. That's the methyl group, and that is also known as the methyl end. Okay, so we have a carboxylic end and, you know, some length of carbons, and then at the far end, we have a methyl group there. How can we categorize fatty acids? We can do so in a number of ways. First, we can look at different chain lengths. So we have short chain fatty acids. These tend to be from two carbons to maybe six carbons. And you would classify those molecules as short chain fatty acids, right? Then if you have 8 to, let's say, 14 carbons, then we would call those medium chain fatty acids, right? In terms of length, medium chain. And then from carbon 16 upwards, those are long chain fatty acids. And if you have more than, let's say, 24 carbon atoms, then that would be a very long chain fatty acid. So we can go by chain length. We can also go by odd and even number of carbons. So if you have C10, clearly that's even. So that's an even chain fatty acid. And you have a C19, let's say, and that would be an odd chain fatty acid. So they're oxidized differently, but you know, and mostly we have beta oxidation of the even chains in the fatty acids. Okay. So primarily we're focused on the even chains, but just good to know that you have even and odd chains. Then you can also have branched chain fatty acids. So, you know, they tend to be linear, but we do have some branched chain fatty acids that you can get maybe from dairy products, right? Like phytanic acid, things like that. And you can also have hydroxy fatty acids. Now, hydroxy fatty acids just have an additional alcohol group, which is the OH or hydroxy group. Okay. So you see your normal fatty acid, but along the chain, you also have a hydroxy group attached to a carbon. That's a hydroxy acid. The most famous probably is your beta hydroxy butyric acid, right? And a lot of people call that a ketone. It's really a hydroxy acid, not a ketone. We really only have one ketone, and that's acetone, okay? Just to clarify. And so we refer to that as really a ketone body and not really a ketone. Okay, so we have those hydroxy acids. Another way that we can categorize the fatty acids is to look at whether the carbon bonds are saturated or unsaturated. And when we say saturated, what we're saying is that there are only single bonds between the carbons on the chain. All right, so it's just a carbon and single bond, another carbon, single bond, another carbon in the chain. When you have a double bond between consecutive carbons in the chain, then we say that that fatty acid is unsaturated because of the presence of double bonds between those carbons. Now we can further divide the unsaturated fatty acids into monounsaturated fatty acids, sometimes called MUFAs, monounsaturated fatty acids, MUFAs, right? The MUFAs. And obviously mono means one. So we're referring to one double bond between two consecutive carbons in the chain. And that would be something like oleic acid, which you find in olive oil. And then, you know, more than one set of double bonds, right? Yeah. So in medicine, like we're okay in math. We're not great in math. So, you know, we try to keep things simple. It's just one or more than one, right? And if it's more than one, we just call it polyunsaturated fatty acids or PUFAs, P-U-F-A's, PUFAs, right? So it could be two double bonds. It could be three. It could be four, five, six double bonds. Anything more than one, we just try to keep things simple. We'll just say PUFAs, polyunsaturated fatty acids. And these are found in corn oil, safflower oil, soybean oil, that kind of thing, right? The seed oils. You get a lot of these PUFAs. Okay, now let's talk a little bit about how we name these fatty acids, the nomenclature, because this comes into play, especially when we're talking about the PUFAs. So there's two ways you can do it. We can start counting the carbons from the carboxylic acid end. Remember the COOH end? Yeah, we can start from that end and call that C the first carbon, so that's C1. The next one is C2, and then the one after that is C3, and so on down the line, depending on how many carbons you have in the chain. So again, from the carboxylic end, C1 is that first carbon that's linked to the OOH. C2 is the next one, and C2 is also called the alpha carbon, right? Then C3 next to that is called the beta carbon. Okay, so that's one way of naming those fatty acids. We can go from the other end, the methyl end, the CH3 end, and that's the last carbon. So it's really known as the omega carbon, right? Alpha and omega, the beginning, the end. So the end carbon, we're going to term the omega carbon, doesn't matter how many carbons there are in the chain, right? You'll call that the omega carbon. And then when we count, then we count from that end. So the first carbon there, the methyl carbon is one, and the one next to it's two, and the one next to it is three. This is important because when you hear the term omega-3 or omega-6 or omega-9, what we're saying is we're referring to the carbon that is counted from the methyl end, from the omega end, and that is that first carbon that is having a double bond, okay, counting from the omega end. So like I said, if it's an omega-3, then the first carbon, the second carbon, the third carbon is going to have a double bond to the fourth carbon, okay? And because we start off with that third carbon, it's an omega-3. And then with the omega-6, you go carbon-4, carbon-5, carbon-6. And then that carbon-6 is double bonded to carbon-7. Now it's an omega-6, okay? Same for omega-9 and so forth, right? So that's what it means when you hear that terminology, omega-3s, omega-6s. All right. Now, we obviously get our fatty acids from the diet, but there are some fatty acids that we can make in our body, and then there are some that we cannot make in our body, right? The ones you cannot make in your body are called essential fatty acids. So anytime in terms of nutrients, if your body cannot make it and you have to get it from the diet, then you say it's essential. That's really what it means. Okay. So the essential fatty acids are fatty acids that you can't make in your own body and you really have to get them from the diet. And essentially, these are the unsaturated fatty acids. Okay. And the reason for it is in some particular cases, the fatty acids that we need, those double bonds need to be in places beyond the carbon 9 from the omega end. Okay, so if you need a C12 double bond, right, we don't have the enzymes for anything beyond the C9. And that's why your body can't make it. And so you're going to have to find a way to get it in the diet. All right. Now, the two essential fatty acids are linoleic acid. This is tricky because they sound similar. Linoleic acid, L-I-N-O-L-E-I-C. Okay. Sometimes abbreviated to L-A. That's linoleic acid. And that can be converted to something called arachidonic acid, okay, also abbreviated as AA. And what's important about arachidonic acid is that it can actually make a lot of very important bioactive molecules in our body, really vital molecules that we need in our body. Right, so the arachidonic acid that comes from the LA, so the AA, can be enzymatically converted to things that we call eicosanoids, E-I-C-O-S-A-N-O-I-D-S, eicosanoids, and the eicosa refers to 20 because there are generally 20 carbons in the chain of those molecules, all right? So they're eicosanoids. So arachidonic acid, so for example, by the action of the COX enzymes, the cyclooxygenases, we can make things like prostaglandins and prostacyclins and thromboxanes. And these are important in inflammatory responses. And then if we use a different set of enzymes called the lipooxygenases, then we can make things like leukotrienes, also very inflammatory, and lipoxins, which tend to be anti-inflammatory, right? So these substances have huge biological significance in the body and very, very important. We tend to say that, the products of arachidonic acid from the omega-6 are inflammatory. I think broadly speaking, we could say that. But what I want to point out is this is very specific to the tissue we're referring to, okay? Because prostaglandins can be inflammatory in one tissue and actually beneficial and more anti-inflammatory in another tissue, right? They're generally thought of as being inflammatory, but what they can do is they can increase, let's say, the production of lipoxins in some circumstances, and that has an anti-inflammatory effect. So you can see the complexity there. It's not just black or white. It's very tissue-dependent and context-dependent. You know me by now, right? It's never one or the other. It really depends on the context. And really, it's a spectrum of things. Okay, but generally, I know that people will refer to the products, the metabolites that come from arachidonic acid as inflammatory. Maybe big picture, you could kind of say that. All right. Now, we also have another essential fatty acid, and this would be the alpha-linoleic acid. And this is, lots of people do that because I don't know why they name these things the way they do. They just sound so similar. Alpha-linolenic acid. Lenic. Alpha, A, linolenic, L, acid, A. A-L-A, okay? All right, we got that straightened out. Now, the alpha-linolenic acid is an omega-3 acid. And it can be further converted into EPA, which is eicosapentaenoic acid, and DHA, which is docosahexaenoic acid. All right, so these have just more double bonds in them, and they have also very important effects on the body. You know, they can help with cardiovascular health. They can decrease, clotting in the blood, and they tend to be anti-inflammatory. DHA, for example, is very important in brain development, very richly found in the brain in neural tissue, and also in, let's say, the retina in your eye, very important in sperm. Okay, so and all of these substances, very important, obviously, in membranes. Okay, all the PUFAs, very important in membranes. Okay, so we have from the ALA, the alpha-linolenic acid, that's an omega-3 acid, we have EPA and DHA made. Now, so technically, you could say that the EPA and DHA are not essential because your body makes them. But, you know, really, it doesn't make a whole lot of it, right? And you do actually need to get them from supplementation or from other sources in the diet. You can't really just depend on the ALA, okay, to be converted to EPA and DHA. Okay, let's make sure, see what else I wanted to say in my notes about those things. The EPA can be converted to some of the eicosanoids that AA makes, like the prostaglandins and so forth, but the metabolites of EPA tend to be less inflammatory. They're still on the inflammatory side, but much less so compared to the metabolites from arachidonic acid, okay? And the EPA and the DHA particularly also make a lot of these specialized pro-resolving mediators, or SPMs, and these are things like protectins and resolvins and mirisins, right? And these tend to dampen or resolve inflammation in your body. So they can be very helpful in the right context as well. Okay, so that would be the EPA and DHA. Now, I'm going to get to this part because when I talk about these essential fatty acids, talk about EPA, DHA, omega-3s, omega-6s, to my patients, I always get this from them. Well, I went online, Dr. Lowe, and I Googled this thing, and it says, you don't have to decrease your intake of omega-6. You just have to eat a little bit more or get a little bit more omega-3s. Okay, so I always hear that. And I just want to point out the conversion of LA, right, into AA and then into the eicosanoids downstream later. And then the conversion of ALA to EPA and DHA. They share the same enzymes, okay? The desaturases, desaturase 5 and 6, and the elongases, yeah, that are used to put on those double bonds, right? Those are the same enzymes for both pathways. And so there is obviously some competition. Okay, so I want to use this analogy. Let's say we're in the kitchen. Okay, that's not a good analogy already because I don't like being in the kitchen, but okay, we'll stick with it. All right, so we're in the kitchen and I'm trying to make a particular meal and you're trying to make a particular meal. All right, but we only have one set of cooking utensils between us. Okay, and what we're making, we need the same utensils, let's just say, all right? So we're about to start cooking, but then the doorbell rings and five of your friends show up and they're there to help you prepare your meal, okay? So now there's six of you, there's one of me, and the same one set of cooking utensils, okay? So who's gonna get their meals fixed sooner, has a higher likelihood of actually completing the task of making that meal? It's probably going to be your team because there's six of you and there's one of me, and I'm trying to use the same utensils, but probably one of the six on your side have gotten hold of those same utensils that I need. So I'll be just standing there waiting the whole time and never quite getting to preparing my meal, right? So that's what we mean when we say there's competition between the LA pathway and the ALA pathway, because they utilize the same enzymes. And yet, you know, you go and you hear a lot of times online or from some providers that, oh, you don't need to decrease your omega-6s, your linoleic acid, your LAs. You just need to up your ALA, your omega-3s, okay? And you'll be fine. Okay, I think a chief culprit is this article because it gets quoted to me all the time. If you go online, you Google it. This is from Harvard Medical Publishing, from Harvard Medical School. It says there, you know, it has the little Harvard badge in it. Harvard Medical Publishing, Harvard Medical School. So, you know, this holds a lot of weight, right, for patients. And they're looking at this. And it basically starts off, and read portions of it to you, that the omega-6 we get from vegetable oils are beneficial. Okay, listen to this. The main charge against omega-6 fats is that the body can convert the most common one, linolenic acid, into another fatty acid called arachidonic acid. And arachidonic acid is a building block for molecules that can promote inflammation, blood clotting, constriction of blood vessels. All right. So already they made the big mistake. Linolenic acid is not converted into arachidonic acid. It's linoleic, the LA, that is converted to arachidonic acid. And actually, you know, it wasn't a typo, because later they keep calling it linolenic acid. So, and I thought, okay, I'm going to try and be generous. I'm going to try and be generous, because there is an omega-6 gamma linolenic, okay? So maybe they were referring to that, okay? The gamma linolenic late acid, okay? But it's really the LA, the linoleic, that is converted to the arachidonic, and it's the alpha linolenic that is converted to the EPAs and the DHAs, right? But anyway, it goes on, and it quotes some study that had three authors from Harvard, so out of nine. So that's three out of nine. That is a third. See, doctors can do math. A third, 33% for extra credit, right? 33% of the researchers were from Harvard. So this is very credible, right? And basically, you know, they're saying that there's no problem with the omega-6s, and, you know, just have a little extra dose of your omega-3s. Don't cut back on the omega-6 fats. That's how it ends. Instead, add some extra omega-3s. Okay, I brought this up only because I get asked so many times. This study gets quoted so many times to me, so I thought I'll just put this in a video and then refer people to that, okay? So the study they quoted, by the way, it was from 2009. So, you know, I decided to just look around that time frame, because science progresses and you just want to be fair, right? So here's one. Okay, this is from the International Journal of Vitamin and Nutrient Research, and is an old one. It's from 1998, all right? And it's by Gerster. Anyway, it says, this is from the abstract, the use of ALA labeled with radioisotopes suggested that with a background diet high in saturated fat, conversion to long-chain metabolites is approximately 6% for EPA and 3.8% for DHA. But with a diet rich in N6, the omega-6 PUFAs, conversion is reduced by 40 to 50%. So you can already see that the conversion is not very high, 6% for EPA and 3.8 for DHA. But in the setting of high omega-6 in the diet, that conversion is further reduced by 40 to 50%, which makes sense. Remember, we're competing for the same enzymes. That was 1998. Okay, this one is from 2002, Simopolis. And I like this one because it's actually more nuanced. And this is, again, from the abstract. In the secondary prevention of cardiovascular disease, and they're talking about ratios of omega-6 to omega-3s, right? So the first number refers to the omega-6s. So in the secondary prevention of cardiovascular disease, a ratio of 4-to-1 was associated with a 70% decrease in total mortality. A ratio of 2.5-to-1 reduced rectal cell proliferation in patients with colorectal cancer, whereas a ratio of 4-to-1 with the same amount of omega-3 PUFA had no effect. The lower omega-6 to 3 ratio in women with breast cancer was associated with decreased risk. A ratio of 2-to-3-to-1 suppressed inflammation in patients with rheumatoid arthritis. And a ratio of 5-to-1 had a beneficial effect on patients with asthma, whereas a ratio of 10-to-1 had adverse consequences. So, and then they go on. These studies indicate that the optimal ratio may vary with the disease, and I'm going to add with the tissue and context, right? The whole context in your body, but tissue specific. So remember when I talked to you about the metabolites of arachidonic acid, and I said, this is going to be very tissue specific. Yes, we generally think of them as inflammatory, but it really depends on where in the body and what that context is. And that's why I mentioned this paper, because that's exactly what we're seeing here. A lower ratio in general, though, of omega-6 to omega-3 is more desirable in reducing the risk of many of the chronic diseases of high prevalence. And, you know, earlier in the abstract, they said, this was 2002, that the ratio in industrialized, westernized diets tended to be 15-to-1, 16-17-to-1. Right? So very much more of the omega-6s than the omega-3s. And we do need to address that ratio and decrease it. So that was from 2002. This is one from, this is the one from 2006 by researchers in from Maastricht University. Yeah. Pretty good department there of nutrition, right? And the title here is Conversion of Alpha-Linolenic Acid in Humans is Influenced by the Absolute Amount of Alpha-Linolenic Acid and Linoleic Acid in the Diet and Not by Their Ratio. So the absolute amount of ALA or LA that you consume, right, is going to influence, you know, the conversion to the downstream metabolites of EPA and DHA. In the discussion section, we showed that conversion of ALA into its longer chain unsaturated fatty acid derivatives is determined by the amounts of ALA or LA in the diet. The absolute amounts are really important. And then later on, they... just let me see, at the end, kind of mentioned that they looked at the, is this the study? No, it's the next one. Yeah, this other one that's from 2018. And this one looked at people with low EPA and DHA status. And then they supplemented them for 12 weeks with a high ALA diet to see what the EPA and DHA concentrations were in those people. And ultimately, they also looked at the downstream metabolites of AA, of LA, okay? So from LA to arachidonic acid to all those eicosanoids that I talked to you about. And there was no relevant reduction in response to a high ALA intake. In other words, the LA derivatives, right? The LA breaking down to AA and then those further metabolites. There was no change even when you gave people a high ALA diet. And this was likely due to the excess of LA in the diet, right? That was too high to be modified by a high ALA diet. Okay, I know there's a lot, but basically it's saying you can't just increase the omega-3s and keep the omega-6s the same. You do have to decrease the omega-6s and try to increase the omega-3s. That's really all I'm trying to show. Okay, I'm just putting it on video because I have to answer this one all the time. So this whole, you can just eat the same amount of the omega-6s and not worry about it and just add a little bit more of the omega-3s. That doesn't work. Okay. So hopefully I don't have to address that one again, but I know that's not true. I probably will have to. All right. So now let's just briefly go into digestion of those fatty acids, right? That we've consumed, whether they're saturated or unsaturated, get in your mouth. You have lingual lipase, which is the enzyme, an enzyme to break down fats, okay? You do have it in your mouth, the back of your tongue. But the pH in your mouth is really not acidic enough. It tends to be more alkaline, right? So there's really no digestion of fatty acids going on in your mouth. And by the way, just to be accurate here, most of these fatty acids that we get in the diet are in the form of triacylglycerols, okay? And this would mean that the fatty acids are attached to a glycerol backbone, okay? So that's how we consume it. And then in the mouth, not a lot happens, but we do have lingual lipase there. Then the lingual lipase together with the food goes into your stomach. And the chief cells in your stomach, will start to secrete gastric lipase. And together with the lingual lipase, we can start the digestion of fats in the stomach. Okay, so we're breaking the bonds between the glycerol and the fatty acids, right? And releasing free fatty acids. In the stomach, this is happening for short chain fatty acids and medium chain fatty acids. That's it. Short chain and medium chain fatty acids. Okay. And then the food goes into the small intestines. And in the small intestines, then, okay, we have most of the digestion of your fats. Okay. First of all, when the food enters into the small intestines, this stimulates the secretion of something called cholecystokinin, okay? And this is going to help your gallbladder contract and release bile, right? It decreases gastric motility, so it slows down the emptying of the stomach because, we've got to digest all this food, so we can't have the food just rush by us. So we want to slow down the emptying of the stomach, have a little come out at a time, so we have enough time to do proper digestion, okay? So that's what cholecystokinin does. And the bile is really important because bile helps to emulsify fat, okay? And by that, we mean it has kind of a detergent effect on fat. So if you've ever seen a layer of oil, let's say you're doing the dishes and it was an oily surface, right? And you add some water and then the oil floats to the surface and you add some detergent and then you see the breakup of that surface into little droplets, okay? That's really an emulsification effect. And bile acids do that. So they're made in the liver, really, and then they're stored in the gallbladder. And then when, it's time for digestion, we release the bile from the gallbladder. And this goes into the small intestines. The cholecystokinin also kind of stimulates the release of all the digestive enzymes from the pancreas. So we start this process of digestion. But for fats, we first got to take these big droplets of fat and make them little droplets. Okay. And when we do that and we make more little droplets by this emulsification effect with the bile salts, then we increase the surface area for the pancreatic lipases, those enzymes from the pancreas, to act on the fats and digest them. Okay. We also decrease the surface tension and just make it more accessible to those lipases from the pancreas for digestion. So these little droplets, right, that are formed by these bile salts that are surrounding it, these are called micelles, M-I-C-E-L-L-E-S, micelles. I know some people say micelles. I just learned them as micelles, so they're going to be micelles. So these micelles now allow the pancreatic lipase to have access to fats and start the digestion process. So in the case of triacylglycerols, we're breaking down the bonds between the glycerol and the fatty acids, right? And then these fatty acids and this backbone of glycerol with one fatty acid still attached, that eventually can get absorbed into the intestinal cells. Okay? So it's an analogy I think we can use is if you're involved in a sport that needs a lot of gear. Yet another unfortunate analogy that I have chosen today, because I don't know any sport that needs gear. But okay, let's say camping, right? So you're gonna pack your camping gear. You're gonna have to disassemble the tent, right, in all its pieces, and then put it in the car. And then when you get to your location where you're going to camp, then you take out all the different disassembled pieces and then you reassemble them, right? And this is what we're doing with digestion. We break, let's say, the triacylglycerols and other lipids that have fatty acids attached to them. We have enzymes to break them, like cholesterol esters, right? We have enzymes to break it into cholesterol and fatty acids. So we break them up, disassemble those lipids, and then these disassembled fatty acids now can enter into the intestinal cells. But once we get on the other side into the intestinal cells, what do we have to do? We have to reassemble it, right? Now you have to actually reassemble the tent, for example, okay, and build it up again so you can use it. So the fatty acids on the other side will be reassembled with the glycerol, and now we form again triacylglycerols. Okay, and eventually these are packaged into lipoproteins. We're going to do a whole episode on lipoproteins, so I'll go into detail in that episode. They're packaged into lipoproteins, and then it enters into the lymphatics of your body, and eventually that dumps out, right? It goes to different parts of your body through the lymph, and then dumps out near the in the thoracic duct, into the bloodstream, and then eventually, and at that point, it gets into your blood. Okay, except for the small and medium chain fatty acids. Those don't need to be digested. Those don't need to be processed in the micelles. So they really just go in directly into the intestinal cells, right? And from there, they don't go into the lymph, right? What they do is they go into the portal vein. They go directly into the bloodstream, but the specific circulation of the portal circulation. So this is the portal vein going directly to the liver. It doesn't bypass the other organs. Okay. And then in the liver, for example, with the medium chain fatty acids, you can now make ketone bodies and other things like that, right? So that's the difference with the short chain and the medium chain fatty acids. They were digested in the stomach, and then in the intestines, they go directly into the portal vein, and they don't need the micelles. They don't go into lymphatics. All right. The difference between the two. Okay. So that would be roughly the digestion part. Now, there's one other thing I want to address here, and this is the big, so Dr. Lo, you know, are saturated fats really bad for you, and you're supposed to avoid them and do more of the you know, unsaturated ones, which tend to be from plant sources, blah, blah, blah. So that's a question that obviously I think many providers get asked. So I thought I'd take a stab at trying to answer this, all right? I don't know. Now, I say that because a lot of these studies are done using food frequency questionnaires. So they ask people just how many times do you eat this or that or this or that. And yeah, you know, people A, don't really know or remember. And secondly, they're not really aware of what's in the foods that they consume. Or, you know, another way that these studies are done, they use the 24-hour food recall. So what you eat yesterday, the last 24 hours, and, you know, people don't even remember that either. And they've done studies where they try to look at, you know, metabolites of foods in the blood, and there was no correlation to what people reported that they ate. Okay, so highly unreliable, first and foremost. Secondly, look, when we say saturated fats, what are you thinking? What is your doctor thinking? Essentially, they mean animal fats. So, you know, lard, that's bad. Tallow, you know, that's bad. Butter, right? And you should be doing olive oil, you know, and all the plant oils and that kind of stuff, because that's good. And fish oil. Right? So that's generally what you hear. Okay. The main thing I want to get across here is in the foods that you eat, the fats you eat, they are a composite of different fatty acids. They are not pure. You're not just eating saturated fats in one form. Okay. When you eat food. So I'm going to give you some examples here. Let's take lard. Lard is really bad for you. It's a saturated fat, and that's really bad for your heart. Okay, so according to this, 39% of the fatty acids in lard, just comes from pork, is saturated, mostly palmitic and stearic acid. Okay? 45% of the fatty acids in lard would be monounsaturated fatty acids, the MUFAs, primarily oleic acid. Yeah, like in olive oil, 45%. That's more than the saturated fats. 11% come from PUFAs, mostly omega-6s. There's 10 times more omega-6 than omega-3 in lard. Right. Okay, let's just look at butter. Okay, butter has 66% saturated fat, you know, mostly palmitic and stearic and myristic, C14, not good, C14. But 26% of the fatty acids in butter are MUFAs, the oleic acid, 3% PUFAs, again, more of the LAs, the omega-6s, than the omega-3s. Okay, tallow, that's beef or mutton fat, right? 26% palmitic and 14% stearic, C18, and 3% myristic, C14. So the total saturated fat there is about 40% of fatty acids, saturated fatty acids in the total content of tallow fat would be from saturated fats. 47% is oleic or MUFAs. And then palmito oleic, 3%, LA 3%, ALA 1%. You getting the picture here? So, and coconut oil, okay. Coconut oil has a lot of the, some of you already know this, the medium chain fatty acids. So it's got 8% of C8 and 7% of C10. 49% of it is C12, the lauric acid, right? And some myristic 8%, palmitic 8%, stearic 2%, oleic 6%, and then the LA is 2%. So you have saturated, but they tend to be the short chain, medium chains, right? In coconut oil. And let's do the famous olive oil? Because I'm sure everyone wants to know. So it turns out olive oil is 55 to 83% oleic. LA content, the omega-6 content, can vary from 3 to 21%, but the ALA, the omega-3 content, is less than 1%. And this is dependent on the soil, the climate, right? All the different circumstances under which those trees, those olive trees, are grown, okay? And this is true for all the fats that I mentioned. It really depends on what the animals have been fed, how they were raised, right? So if you have the, let's say, grain-fed animals, they tend to have more, even more omega-6s, for example, right? Than those that are grass-fed. So the conditions under which the animals were raised, and there's just variation within the species as well. The main point is when someone says, oh, saturated fats, and then how did they, you look at the study and you're like, okay, how did you get the saturated fat? Oh, well, you know, we saw like whether they use lard and tallow and whether they use butter. And I'm like, well, okay, you know, depending on the sources, some of your animal fats, which you call saturated fats, may have more of the MUFAs than your actual olive oil, right? And this is all mixed up in all those studies. So, really, I personally don't think the saturated fats are harmful, and, you know, but you also have to say, you know, what do you mean by when you look at the source? Because the studies rarely, and I know it's not easy to find a study where they are specifically giving the patient only that fatty acid, right? Specifically, let's say, palmitic acid. We're talking about usually food sources, and that's very varied. So who knows? I don't know, right? And that's important. It's important to know what you don't know. And my worry is that a lot of people don't know what they don't know. And I can tell you, there's a lot I don't know. But at least I know that. Okay? So, yeah, I read these studies, I don't quite know what to do with them. Honestly. All right. Time for our wrap up. Finally. Let's see. What did we start with? We talked about lipids as a general category of organic compounds. And how fatty acids are really a subclass of lipids, right? Then we looked at the general formula of fatty acids with the carboxylic end, COOH, and then the methyl end, CH3 end. And we can classify them according to number of carbons in the chain, so chain length, and odd or even number of carbons, and whether they are branched, whether they have hydroxy groups in them, and also we look at the bonds, and if there are no double bonds, they are saturated. And if you have double bonds, we would call them unsaturated fatty acids. We then went on to look at how we name those unsaturated fatty acids, right? So we count from the methyl group N as the C1, and where you see the first double bond will determine whether it's a omega-3, omega-6, omega-12, whatever, fatty acid. In the unsaturated fatty acids, you have monounsaturated, so they just have one double bond, and you can have polyunsaturated fatty acids, so that's just more than one double bond, right? And there are essential fatty acids that your body cannot make. These are primarily linoleic acid, LA, right? And those can be processed by enzymes to become arachidonic acid and then downstream further into eicosanoids, which are biologically active substances important for signaling, important for inflammation in your body, right? But it's very specific to the tissue and to the context in your body. And some of those eicosanoids are also anti-inflammatory. And the ALA would be the omega-3s, right? And that's alpha-linolenic acid. And that can be converted to EPA and DHA, and these are very important for cardiovascular health, blood thinning, and anti-inflammatory effects, development of brain, especially for DHA, for example. Okay, so you have those two main branches of essential fatty acids, and they are processed, the LA and the ALA are processed into downstream metabolites by the same set of enzymes. And so they compete with each other for use of those enzymes. And if you have more of one set of the PUFAs, so it's, let's say you have more of the omega-6s, then you're going to have less downstream metabolites from the omega-3s. Okay, that's generally the big picture. And we do want to try to get our intake of the PUFAs in a good ratio. So you really don't want to overdo the omega-6s. I prefer the ratio of 1:1 because, again, you're competing for the same enzyme, right? So a 1:1 mix in the diet. The problem is that most people in industrialized countries, the ratio of 6:3 would be closer to 25:1, right? And that's really hard to address. Okay, so that would be the omegas and the ratios. And then we talked a little bit about the digestion and absorption of fats. And specifically, just for you to know that the short and medium chains, they're digested in the stomach by lingual and gastric lipases, and then they go, you know, in the intestines, are directly absorbed into the intestinal cells and go into the portal circulation, go straight to the liver. Whereas other fats, they're broken down and digested in these micelles, and then eventually they get into the intestinal cells where they are reassembled into these lipid compounds, and then they are transported via lipoproteins in the lymphatic system that eventually hooks up with the blood circulation, okay? And finally, I just wanted to emphasize that in terms of dietary fats, it's always a composite of various fatty acids. There isn't a food that is purely one type of fatty acids, right? So when we're talking about some of these nutrition studies and the effects of different foods, it's really hard to know what we're talking about, because even within one type of fat, let's say lard, the percentages are not fixed. They vary according to the animal, the species, the conditions they were raised, the food that they were given, right? So that is going to be something that we have to figure out, because right now some of the conversation around dietary fats just don't make sense to me. And you know, in essence, that's really a big reason I'm making this podcast. It's because I just want to get everybody on the same page first and try to determine what we're actually saying, what we're actually talking about, and make sure we're having the same conversation. Because a lot of times, even in these studies, you're like, are we even talking about the same thing? And so, you know, the reason I'm doing this podcast, hopefully, is to get people all on the same page so we can have meaningful conversations that, you know, hopefully will give us more ways to think about our bodies and how we can take care of ourselves. All right. So, I've had a hectic schedule and had to really push to get this episode filmed. But Thomas, I hope you got the information you were looking for, and thank you for requesting it. And again, those of you who have made other requests, I will get to them, I promise. In the meanwhile, again, check the live stream schedule on my website. And for now, signing out from VLMD Rounds, I am Dr. Vivian Lowe, and I sing the body electric.